Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am Tim Bertino, and we have a bit of a Cables to Clouds co-host takeover in this one this week. I am joined by Tim McConaughey and Chris Miles. Tim, what's going on?
Not much, man. I'm just, invading your podcast. So we thought, we weren't having enough fun over at our podcast. We figured we need to come over here and crash this one as well. So, no, man,
what Tim,
it's going
what Tim
good.
Is saying is we don't have any fun on our podcast. It's all straight
no, laced. I hope that doesn't come across. It's very straight laced. No, it's been good, man. I have a new toy, which is I've got a bunch of new flashcards. It's about 200 flashcards. I'm working my way through kanji now. I'm well on my way to learning Japanese still. So that is my free time, as fun as it sounds.
So how do you, now that we're post the trip, how do you feel like you did when you were there?
I got to say, I was really anxious and it went fine. Like, I don't know how else to say it. It really went fine. There was definitely some times that I got into some more interesting conversations that I didn't expect that I was going to have. You know, we got stuck in Osaka. I was sitting, we took the opportunity to do our laundry. And while we're sitting there waiting on the machine to open up, this was in a hotel. I started talking to somebody who was there and they were there on vacation and they were Japanese and they were there for Obon and we had a really good conversation. I was surprised. So I am by no means fluent. However, I was more fluent than I expected I would be. So it's coming along.
I'm sure people will appreciate that you're making the effort, right?
Oh no, everybody's really nice in Japan. They were really, really nice in Japan. Yeah.
So what's new with you, Chris?
Yeah, not much, man. I've had a very busy work week, man. I'm pretty drained, and it's Friday here at the time of recording. And after work, I think we're gonna go play some softball and drink some beer. So I have a very simple man evening scheduled for tonight, and I'm very happy about that.
That Aussie summer.
Yeah, there you go. You need that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, we do have a guest that has joined us for this episode. We have David Roos. David, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity, first of all. It's really cool to be a part of something, especially in the networking community. I just, I'm late to the game a little bit, but I'm trying to work my way up there and start making those connections and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
So networking is a very broad term. What are some of the things that get you excited about network infrastructure?
Routers and switches.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No. Originally, I wanted to go into video game design back when I was very young and naive and thinking it would be just really cool and really easy, right? And my parents were like, well, it's a very niche field, but whatever you want to do, as long as you're happy. But how about you get into IT first? Maybe get a help desk job, get your security plus, net plus, something around there, something in the basics to get you a job, get you a foot in the door working on, computer and stuff like that, and then kind of see where you want to go from there. And then so I did that. My parents are retired military, so we were living near a base at the time, Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, very small town of about 3,000 people. So got a job on base there as a contractor out there working at a help desk. While I was there, one of my coworkers suggested that I go for my CCNA. Just out of blue, I'm like, what's that? That sounds like something. Because I was still new to the field. I didn't know what any of the exams or tests or certifications were or even the general field. So yeah, sure. I bought a book and, started working through it about 6 months later, took the test, passed, got my CCNA. And about the time some of the network guys on our team were leaving. So I kind of got shifted over to that since I just got my CCNA, which was cool. And then I, you know, over the years, I kind of migrated into a cyber territory, which it was an upgrade in job, but not necessarily what I wanted to do and was passionate about. So I continued studying for Cisco certs and got my CCNP, applied for a networking job there, and got it, stayed there for a couple of years, and then eventually moved to Tennessee at Fort Campbell as a networking job there. Did that for about 3 years. And then finally last year, I'm down here working at Anok in Texas and currently pursuing my CCIE.
I want to step back there for a second. You mentioned, at least I thought I heard you say that, was it your parents that mentioned maybe starting out with a Security Plus or Network Plus? So did they have an IT background?
No. They didn't, but they knew that video game design was, I don't know, maybe they thought video game design was more like, you know, how people stream and play video games and, you know, make millions of dollars. And someone's like, what? why can't I make that money? You know, it was one of those things where it wasn't really seen or talked about. So there wasn't really a market for it, maybe. And back when I was, you know, going for it, I don't know. I didn't really look into it, but they're like, get your IT working on, you know, there's some jobs open here at the base. And the minimum requirement was a Security Plus. So I was working at McDonald's at the time, studied. I had my flashcards up on the monitor, handed out burgers to people. You know, just trying to get my Security Plus, you know, got that and got my foot in the door. And that's where it all started. And then eventually I fell in love with, you know, Cisco and you know, getting my CCNA and networking. And it was just, that's where we're at now.
And you said you work in a network operations center now. I don't have any experience directly working at Anok. Can you kind of give me some of the, what's some of the day-to-day like? What are some of the challenges? What do you maybe like and don't like about it?
I will say it comes with a military clearance, so I can't talk too much about it, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
But I can give you, you know, the day-to-day operations. It's 24 hours, you know, supporting, you know, all over the world, obviously. So whenever someone's awake somewhere else, we're 24-hour help desk, basically. We're tier two networking troubleshooting. The main thing I like about it, I mean, is the people. You know, sometimes you work with a bunch of people that you really like, and, you know, sometimes you don't get that opportunity, unfortunately. But I have a good group of people that I work with, and I work the evening shifts. So it gives me a lot of time to study because there's not as many calls coming through, not as many tickets to work on. But the flip side of that, not a lot of people are there. So when a major call comes in, you're waking people up in the middle of the night going, hey, something's down. We need and, you know, those are the calls you don't want to make, but you have to. But it's really good. It's starting to help me get practice. I've never worked on the higher level stuff, you know, the routing and like the BGPs and the OSPFs and the EIGRP. Before I was only tier one, even though I had a CCNA and CCNP, the level of job requirement was only, we didn't require a CCNA. You know, I was only, like I said, it only required a Security Plus, but I was in a networking role and that limited my ability. You know, Spanning Tree works automatically, so I can't do anything with that. And that's, you know, I was basically shutting off ports and turning them back on again kind of thing for port security. So this was definitely an upgrade to doing more things with my certification and my knowledge, which I like. I like the challenge.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is I used to be a military contractor as well in Anok. I worked for the on the Navy Marine Corps intranet. And that's what you said about the kind of level of control that they give you at certain levels. It's very true. The military is very good about that.
Of duties, they're very good about it.
Yeah. And what that means, of course, is what you said. If you are a level one, like, you're not going to get the work experience that you need to, you know, you're not going to be able to do changes. You're not going to be able to make routing changes, role config changes and stuff like that. So that's a hard one to break through. So I'm glad you were able to get up to, I guess, to tier two now.
Yeah. And actually, might be even tier three, here maybe the next year or so. We'll see, depending on what jobs are starting to open up. But it was really hard also, because when I got my CCNA, when I first started going for my CCNA, I saw that there was a CCIE. And when I saw that there was a CCIE and the level of that it was, I knew right then and there I wanted to get it. It was a matter of time when I went for it, you know. So here we are now.
I did see on your Twitter or X, whatever people call it these days, profile. You were a thank you, Tim. You're a self-proclaimed EIGRP enthusiast. Do you want to explain what you like about EIGRP?
That one's hard. I guess just to me, it would just seem like a more fluid protocol than OSPF. And I'm fully, I know there's going to be so many comments. I'm fully aware that there is a place for each of the routing protocols in all kinds of networks. I fully get that. but I will recommend EIGRP every time, no matter what the problem is. I don't know, maybe I just understand it better. Maybe the name sounds cool. It could be accumulation of things. I got to meet a couple of the authors at the Cisco Live, and it should be pinned on my profile. I think I have a picture standing.
I was just going to bring it up.
Donnie, right? You met Donnie
and Peter. Yep.
Gotcha.
I was going to say you're so much of an enthusiast that you printed off the RFC to have them sign it.
And they did. They were gracious enough to sign it. And I was really appreciative of it. And it's funny because people are like, well, why'd you get signed? How much is it going to be worth? I'm like, nothing. It's $0. Like, it's for me. It's not for anybody else. You know, it's not worth something to other people. You know, but when you get people that you look up to and you aspire to be like, especially in knowledge, like those guys have knowledge that I can't even fathom at this point. So I'm just trying to work my way up and be among the crowd.
Yeah, I don't know how many other vendors are actually implementing that RFC, but it's good. It's good that it exists, right? I have a quick question. So you seem to me, I honestly don't know how old you are, but you seem to me like a younger man working in a network operations center. And I am no longer a younger man, but I was once in that position. And I'll say, I don't mean to take this directly to a very deep and kind of, culture war question. But something I experienced a lot when I was working in a NOC, I was pretty young. There's a lot of lifers there. A lot of people that have been there for a very, very long time. And some of them have accolades that have gotten to them to the point where they deserve the position, the titles that they have. Some of them have gotten it just purely out of tenure without, a lot of performance related to it. And as someone like you that just kind of got into it working in a NOC and now you're going for your CCIE, I remember when I went through that pathway, it was more like I wanted people to trust me. I wanted people to be able to give me the responsibility that I felt like I could handle. Is that something that you kind of align with as well on the military side?
Yes. On probably a couple of those points. Like I said, I've always worked at the lower tiers, so I didn't have much access. I didn't have much control. I didn't have much say, even though I felt like I knew things. It was all theoretical knowledge. There was no hands-on. I couldn't, prove that I knew it. And it's really hard to, when you don't have stuff, tools like CML or whatever, you can't just say, well, look, this is what it's the EIGRP, this is what it's doing specifically. And you have to convince people that's what it's doing, especially ones who don't have, their CCMP or CCIE. I feel like if I get my CCIE, I will, and going actually, now that you mentioned that, going for that and telling my coworkers that I'm going for it, and I've actually solved a couple of network problems at the NOC that they were experiencing that I don't even know if they knew that they had. I've submitted, change requests and I had to be very detailed. There was like 4 pages of this change request, but it was for one change, but I had to be as detailed and thorough as possible as to what's going on and why it should be changed. And I think they just started implementing it just now. So it was a lot of effort, but for me, it was worth it because it got people to see like, oh, well, he kind of does know. And then more of those opportunities will come along and eventually I will get to it. But I understand it's going to take some time for that reason. There's people in there that are lifers, like you said. It's just that's the way the dice rolls. But if you let that bring you down and stop you, you're never going to go anywhere, fortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I definitely remember that how good it felt that first moment whenever you get to take something from like your very intricate deep level studies and apply it in the real world. And someone's like, oh, yeah, it feels so good. So I'm glad you've already had that moment.
I had to show how an EIGRP query packet traversed the network when a network went down and explain it to non-technical people. So it was a challenge, but I think I got it through. So it was cool.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've found. So I am not going for the CCIE, but I did the CCMP Enterprise recently. And that was one thing that I liked with the newer curriculum is that I didn't find that there was much in the enterprise track that was not applicable. Like most of the stuff that it covered, I felt was very applicable to, if there is such a thing, typical enterprise network engineer. And I love those moments where I'd be studying something on the side going toward that certification and then roll into work the next day and hit something that I just covered and was able to get through it a lot more quickly because I was studying. So it was really good to see that level of applicability.
Definitely.
While studying. So let's kind of start talking about the CCIE. And I know for sure we didn't warn David that when we brought him on as he's studying for a CCIE that he would be doing this interview with two CCIEs. So you can take that as a blessing or a curse, but I encourage you to take advantage of the time. So how have you been approaching studying for the CCIE?
Yeah. So this is obviously the first time I've ever gone for something like this. So it's kind of new water for me, especially not having the, you know, they recommend, you know, 5 to 10 years experience, depending on what you're doing, before you take the CCIE. And I have the 10 years in office, but I don't have the 10 years experience because, like I said, those first, you know, 5, 6 years, it was layer two or nothing kind of thing. So I didn't get that. So I'm really making up for lost time. Yeah, I'm trying to hit up all the CCIEs I can as far as knowledge. Sans asking about the test, Cisco. Don't worry about that. I'm not trying to get answers from anyone, but I'm definitely
we can't help you there anyway.
I can from priestesses.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Well, yeah. Can't help you there.
Just trying to power my way through it, and it's like I said, going on 2 years now studying, and I feel like the longer time is due to the non-experience, and I'm just really just making up for whatever I can.
Have you done Barbara Oakley's course, Learning How to Learn, on Coursera? It's free, and I recommend it to anyone studying anything big like the CCIE.
I saw you recommend it. Well, Bill recommended, but you recommended it to Bill, and I saw it in the Discord, and I did. I think I went through the first 2 weeks, like watching the videos and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that will ignite some fires or turn on some light bulbs that weren't previously there kind of thing to kind of, cause my study tactics are, I feel like they're all over, you know, I got note cards, I got a mind map online, I got the Anki flash deck or whatever it's called. And I got my CML, which is pretty much my bread and butter right now. That's how I'm making it through.
Yeah. It's one thing that specific course teaches you is how to approach studying, which is funny because when I took the CCIE, I myself did not ever know that course existed. Mm-hmm. And so what happened to me was I ended up face planning accidentally into a lot of the lessons that I found. So after I took the CCIE, I found that course and I took it and I was just like, forehead smack after forehead smack about like, why the hell was this when I was actually, you know, I figured it all out as I went, but like in that way that, you know, you find your way through a dark room with the lights off and you're like banging your knee on everything. And so I, ever since then, I just recommend it to everybody to understand the strategy of studying and the strategy or the neuroscience of how you actually learn something.
Yeah, and I actually think that's the benefit of taking as long as I am studying for the test, because if I did it in like 6 to 8 months, you know, I wouldn't have known the extra resources. But going on two and a half years of studying for this test, you know, just last week I found about that course from Tim. Now I have ample time to go for that course and still make up some study time. So I feel like giving yourself some extra time to study will allow you to access more resources because you have that time.
Yeah, totally. I think as a CCI candidate, the number one thing we should be asking you right now is, why aren't you labbing? What are you doing? What are you doing recording a podcast? You should be labbing.
Man, what are you doing
all
here?
The time?
Coincidentally enough, I was working on BGP right before I joined you guys. I turned off my BGP lab, and I will continue it once I get done with this podcast.
Yeah, it's. We talked about it on the CCIE episode we did with A1 a while back, but I remember like this, when you finally get the pass, like I realized like 2 days later how broken my brain was. Cause I was like, it was like a Sunday and like someone invited me to go out and like go out to brunch or something. And I was like, well, I can't, dude, I got a lab. And I was like, oh shit. No, I don't have to do that anymore. Like my, I have free time now. It's crazy. But yeah, I will say I've been following you on Twitter for a while and I've noticed like, you even got married while you're studying for this thing. That's like, I don't know how you fit in planning a wedding and doing all this crap. So like how are you managing time and, you know, your kind of like, relationship and things like that? Cause I think that's very important.
Yeah. Very forgiving partner. That's how that's the one sentence I can offer. Just make sure they're forgiving. No, the wedding was actually very small. We just had mom and dad on both sides come down. And I think a brother, went to the botanical gardens locally here, got married, didn't have a big ceremony. It was just, I mean, we did it under budget, under time, and, you know, under everything. So we, it was very quick and easy. No huge blowout. We did go to Hawaii for our honeymoon, so that was our big expenditure. But yeah, the commitment it takes away from your family is definitely a lot. And I'll repeat it again. I've never been through something like this, and it's a lot. And I'm not done with it yet, and it's already a lot. So you need to be sure to communicate this with your partner or your family. You know, whoever you're always hanging out with, or whoever you're always texting, they need to understand that there are going to be some days, and then as it gets closer, there'll be no days of hanging out and doing stuff and fun stuff. My partner sat down. I was like, look, this is going to be a big undertaking. It's not even required for my job. It's just a personal goal that I've always had, and I need it. And it's not just a one and done. You can't just sit down 2 years ago and say, hey, I'm taking the CCIE. It's going to take this long. Leave me alone for 2 years. You know, you can't do that. You need to constantly communicate and say, hey, you know, I'm still working on this. I'm still working on this. And actually, it's funny you mentioned it, because it got brought up a couple weeks ago. It wasn't any kind of like bad conversation or anything. It was just that, hey, like where are you at in your studies? Like, I have no idea like where you're at in your studies. And I thought about that, and it was kind of impactful. I was like, if you go for like a master's degree, and somebody knows that you're going for a master's degree, they know what day you're going to graduate, they know what classes you're taking, you know, they know all the things and the progress. They can see the progression, the progress bar for that.
It's a linear timeline.
No idea. Exactly. It's a linear timeline. And he had no idea how many subjects I had to study, what subjects I had to study, what my, you know, how fluent I was in these subjects. So what I did was I ended up printing out the blueprint. I actually got one right here, and I highlighted in green, yellow, and red the subjects I was really good at, kind of working on, and don't know anything about, so he could see my linear progress of what I was working on, because that's a visual, you know, for him. And I felt that was very important to see the progress, because if all you're saying is I'm studying, there's no, you can't make a connection of like where you're at in this process.
Yeah.
And it's very hard.
Well, I think the fact that he's been that interested and that invested goes to show that I think you picked the right partner.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a stipulation. I was like, if you want to get married, just know this test is coming. And so it's a temporary sacrifice for hopefully a future, setting us up for our future. Like I said, it's not even required for my job. It's only required for a CCNA. But, you know, the job opportunities that would potentially open up, and, you know, traveling around the world kind of stuff, that's future me looking out for present me looking out for future me.
Yep.
Would you say, you said it's not required for your job, but do you see anybody that you work with that has a CCIE, is working toward it, or anything like that? Because I had asked that question, it might have been in our CCIE episode, to Chris. And Chris, if I remember right, I don't remember that in your work environment at the time that there were many CCIEs. It was just something that you were going after and was going to be a level up for you.
Yeah, in my environment, it was like that. It was like one or two maybe within my current organization. Oddly enough, while I was in the middle of studying, I changed careers to a VAR where the CCIE was a dime a dozen. So I was not special at all by the time I actually got it. But it was, like I said, it was, my motivator was that responsibility. And you know, I think, David, I think eventually you will get that, and you will, you know, once you have that next to your name, it's like, people respect you, but also people really want to stump you all the time. People really want to prove you wrong for some reason. There's a lot of stump the chump stuff that might happen in job interviews. So I hope you're ready for that. It'll be very fun.
A lot of people out there that never passed it or gave up on it or whatever, or just have the wrong impression of what being a CCIE actually means, right? And so that's what they think, that they have to stump the chump that you're supposed to know everything because you're a CCIE.
They'll find that obscure question on the middle of the internet that nobody knows the answer to. It was funny you mentioned that, because when I went for this interview, like I said, only a CCNA was required, and they asked a spanning tree question. And I think it was like, what is spanning tree? And my simple answer was, it's a layer 2 loop prevention mechanism. Like at its core function, that's what it was. And that was my answer. Like that, you know, unless they wanted the deep dive of the timers and the port, you know, things, I didn't think they wanted that. That's what it is. It's layer 2 loop prevention. And I was the only one who got it right. Like out of all the candidates, they said later when I got the job, they're like, you're the only one that got that question right. I'm like, what? That's like six chapters of the CCNA book. What are you talking about?
So the reason I asked that question is I'm trying to find out, do you have any sort of CCIE support system at work that you can bounce ideas off of, questions, challenges, that kind of thing? Or from a work perspective, are you kind of on your own?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's on my own scenario. And as Chris mentioned, some of the, and I'm not trying to talk bad on anybody. It's to each their own. Nobody has to go for CCIE. It's you know, you get your CCNA, and some people are just happy with the CCNA, and that is totally fine. But that's what I work with, and I don't have that knowledge I can bounce off of and say, oh, hey, I've been having this problem on this protocol, and you know, they've never heard of it because that's on a CCIE topic and it's not CCNA. But I have found a little loophole. One of my coworkers, I have convinced, and by convinced, I said, you're going to do this for me. I was like, I'm going to like learn some topics, and every day or once a week, I'm going to present this topic to you and try to teach you this topic, maybe at a higher level, nothing too specific. And I need you to see if you can understand it. And if I can do that, one, you know, they would learn as well, on some of the topics. They might not absorb or grasp everything, and that's fine. I just want to be able to like whiteboard it and say, well, okay, well, when this neighborship goes down, this is the sequence of events that happens, and these are kind of the packets and protocols exchanged. So it gives me a deeper level understanding. So even though there's not a CCIE to bounce stuff off of, I can still squeeze it in a little bit.
Teaching is a great way to learn, man. You never find your gaps faster than when you're trying to teach something to somebody else and they ask that question, and you're like, ah, shit, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, 100%. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. And eventually I would like to teach content, you know, maybe a CCIE or two down the road. Once I got a couple under the belt, I would eventually like to start creating some content, probably just geared towards CCIE studies. Cause you know, there's some content out there, but it's kind of few and far between. I've seen some good courses, but I think I have like 6 different subscriptions right now going on just to get all the content that I'm trying to get.
Oh dude, so, come over to cloud and cybersecurity.
Once I get it,
you can get 6 figures in 6 months, bro. Yeah. Or 6 weeks. Maybe, 6,
Yeah. 14 just certifications my plan. In 2 weeks. Yeah. No, nothing like that.
That's funny. So you're even projecting now. You're saying once you got a couple under your belt, so you've already. I mean, obviously your curriculum and your study patterns for what you do is already very, very robust, very thought out, and far more advanced than some of us. I will say that. So you say you're potentially going to go for another one. Do you feel like you want to keep doing this?
I do. I think I'm going to, I didn't realize this till later in life. I think I'm going to be a lifelong learner. And yep. it feels good to be a lifelong learner. Cause I mean, technology, man, you stop, you're gone. You know, you start stopping, it's out. So yeah, hopefully maybe 2-3 more CCIEs, just depending on where my life takes me. I'm looking to retire here in about 15 years, you know, at least from the first job, and then hopefully pick up a second job. You know, the goal is to either work at Cisco or Disney. Don't mean to name drop, but those are my, be an engineer, a network engineer at one of those two companies. Those would probably be, I'm speaking into existence right now.
I had aspirations. So I don't know if I've even mentioned this on either podcast before, but I used to be a very, very big, well, I still am a very big Disney Parks fan. So I used to go like 4 to 5 times a year, to Disney World and Disneyland and things like that. And like, if you know there's a Imagineer, that's the basically the kind of the person that's responsible for designing rides and all the like innovation stuff at the theme parks. I remember I was like, I'm going to be a network Imagineer. That's what I'm going to do. But then I've also learned like being, if I work there, I'd probably end up hating it. So I don't know if I want to go that far, but I hope that comes to fruition for you for sure.
Yeah. And you know, it could turn out terrible. I may not like either of those jobs. You know, you just never know. I have a goal, and if it doesn't work out the way I want, I just change course. I figure it out.
I mean, I worked at Cisco for 6 years, and you know, it's a good company. So I wouldn't say anything bad about it. Like all companies, it has, you know, big company problems, but it was a good place to work. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I feel like as long as I'm being challenged and I'm able to grow within the company in the direction that I feel is best for me, then I feel like it would work out regardless of the company.
So you said you've been studying for the CCIE for a little bit, and you've got a date picked out. You see the light at the end of the tunnel. So what are you doing? What's your schedule look like to make sure you meet that date?
Yeah. Hopefully I'm taking it at Cisco Live in the US in 2024, which is the first week of April, last week of May, somewhere around there. I've already got the flight and the hotel booked. I just need to wait for the testing to open up to pay for the test. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. I'm beating the clock here. I'm trying to cover all of the exam topics by the end of this year, or finish all the exam topics by the end of this year, because I kind of got started late with the SDA and the SD-WAN stuff. And like Tim said, I got married and then went on vacation. So it wasn't all studying this year. So I definitely had some breaks. But I'm on track to finish the blueprint by the end of this year. And then for the next 5-6 months until my test, it's just all review. It should all just be review.
How are you doing the SD-WAN SDA labbing?
It hurts my head and my heart a lot. I actually just finished a video course on CBT Nuggets on the SDA like theory. So it's like most of the topics were mentioned in the blueprint in the course. I have zero hands on for SD-WAN and SDA at the moment. So I will be looking, probably hitting up the Discords and looking for rack rentals and stuff like that to what I can get my
hands on. Yeah, I think Cisco does rack rentals for the SDA stuff. I'm not sure if it's up to date with the new 1.1 blueprint, but I would, before you sit the exam, I highly, highly recommend getting your hands on like actual, like, you know, rack time if at all possible.
That is definitely the goal. And actually, since I was a Cisco VIP community for their community page this past year, up until the end of this year, it came with a free exam voucher. So I'm actually using that. It expires in March of next year, I think. I'm actually using that to take the SD-WAN concentration test. That's kind of, I don't want to, you know, devalue it by calling it a throwaway test, but that will gauge my SD-WAN capabilities before my CCIE lab exam. So it was kind of like a blessing that I got. So hopefully it will help me out, you know, see where my weak points were. So even if I fail the test, you know, it was a free voucher, I at least get to see where my weak points are without having to spend, you know, $2,000 on just going to the CCIE.
Yeah. Just be aware that the specialty exams do go a lot deeper into the topic than you can probably expect from the actual. So don't read too much into it, I guess is what I'm saying. Use it to gauge your readiness, but mm-hmm. don't read too far into it if you have problems like absolutely. With some of the more advanced stuff.
I'm going to try to match up the blueprints of the concentration and then what's in the CCIE. Because if I fail, at least give me the domain percentages that I can go off of. Like you said, a rough estimate, not too deep.
I wanted to ask how you were approaching doing labs, practicing labbing for the CCIE, because it came up from Erica, Tim, and Chris in our CCIE episode that they had used those, and I'm going to get the terminology wrong, but like the INE labs or the INE walkthroughs that would give you the scenario for a lab. So how were you getting your lab scenarios to know what to build and what to practice?
That's right up there.
Okay.
I do have a subscription to INE as well. Actually, I had it a while ago when they had the downloadable workbook, so I think I have that downloaded somewhere to possibly practice on. What I've been doing is just going through the blueprint topics. So at least I'm, you know, everything that's actually listed in the blueprint topics, I'm going through, you know, like EIGRP, they have summary route with leak map. I'm making sure that I'm specifically practicing a summary route with, you know, with a leak map. And then just kind of adding stuff in there. You know, it's not asking about changing the timers or anything, but, you know, maybe I'll change a timer on the neighbors. And I think I have three major routing labs, one for BGP, EIGRP, and OSPF right now. And a big layer 2 one, and they're probably 2 to 3 pages each. But it incorporates more of the technologies, like, you know, maybe my EIGRP lab will have UDP SLA involved with it. And maybe my OSPF lab will have TCP SLA with IP source guard kind of thing. So I'm sprinkling those other technologies that aren't specified with a routing protocol into my routing protocol lab. So I'm just trying to use most of the features. You know, I hit the question mark. I see all the list of features that OSPF offers under the global process. I'm like, okay, what does this do? What does this do? Maybe I can lab on that guy and I'll write it into a Word document, configure neighbors to this, but only use one command to do it kind of thing. So, and the way I write it, I don't write configure OSPF with MD5 authentication or SHA authentication. I would say configure OSPF to provide the strongest authentication between peers. So it's not explicitly stated. So it gets my mind to think, okay, shit.
Makes you think through which one does it really mean? Yeah.
What is the strongest? So it's not specifically stated. So hopefully that will develop my critical thinking skills.
I do want to ask about troubleshooting when it comes to labs and trying to figure out where and when things go wrong. So I'll start with Chris. Chris, when you were going for the CCIE and you were, I think you were collaborating with Tim and others in your journey. So how did you guys get together and put a lab topology together and somebody would break something and then other people would have to figure it out? Like, how did you practice troubleshooting when it came to the CCIE lab?
Good question. I think yes and no. I think there were people that did that. I don't know if Tim and I specifically did that. I remember Tim actually wrote an entire, or at least started writing some exam questions and, you know, gave a topology and things like that. So good on you, Tim, for doing that.
Yeah.
You did the whole thing? Yeah. I remember I went through that. So we definitely kind of helped each other, you know, with certain scenarios and things like that. I think the real thing that we probably collaborated on more often was just developing that that like rigorous framework for troubleshooting. Once CCIE is over, it's already over. Once it's fully out of my mind, I probably will forget every bit and protocol and, you know, nerd knob that I learned along the way. One thing that I will take with me forever is the ability to troubleshoot. It made me a probably 10 times better troubleshooter just because just be able to draw correlations, you know, troubleshooting, you got to treat it like the elephant that you have to eat one bite at a time, right? You got to do small things to see what inferences you can make, what correlates to this, what correlates to that, right? And just being able to break it down in bite-sized pieces, right? So that was probably the biggest takeaway for me. I don't know about you, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the ability to troubleshoot. So the INE workbook, right? We would do what we do is on Sundays, we would get together and there'd be three or four of us. We would get on I think it was Google Meet at that point that we were using, and we would just we'd all share our screens and we'd all work on the same lab for 8-hour lab, right? We'd all sit there, do the 8-hour lab. And then the next day, so actually it was Saturday and Sunday, sorry. So Saturday we would do the lab. Sunday we would meet up and we would all just go through the lab. Like, hey, what did you get for this? What did you do here? Oh, cool. I hadn't thought about doing that. Like, why did you do it that way? Oh, well, cause the task said it should be done this way. I assumed that's what it had to be. And we just compare answers and talk our own ways through the labs. And that helped us understand like other perspectives as well, which was invaluable. And I know that's going to be probably a little tougher for you, David, because you don't have a cohort, but you know, that might be something I would suggest. Actually, there's a lot of people out there that are in various stages of saying that they're studying for the CCIE. You have access to Twitter. You have, we have, even within the Art of Network Engineering, you know, Discord, there are people who are studying for their CCIE. Don't do it. You don't have to do it alone. There's a reason that you should do it alone. I would not have gotten my CCIE if I hadn't had the cohort of people that I had. Cause I was just studying on my own. I was doing basically what you were doing. And once you get together with other people and you have a plan of attack and you work together, it's just like a whole different ball game. It really is.
Absolutely. I do use the Discord. I'm active in a couple of communities. I think I have like two or three that I'm really active in. And one of them, I'll every Friday, since I work at the 24-hour NOC, my shift is, you know, Sunday to Thursday. So on Friday in the morning after the gym, I'll go into the video chat and I'll share my screen and I'll have my CML up on half the screen and my lab that I created on the other side of the screen. And that's basically what I do. But but as far as troubleshooting, I found the most effective way to troubleshoot hands down is to create a lab, do a whole bunch of stuff to it. And then 2 weeks later, come back to it without realizing anything you've done. I've spent hours troubleshooting something that I implemented 2 weeks ago that I just forgot about in a CML topology. Because I was playing with a setting for something, it would advertise the route weird, or it would just not form a BGP connection or this and that. And it's because I configured Anycast and it was hitting this IP first instead of the other neighbor's IP in 2 hours. And, you know, just straight up troubleshooting my own equipment. If there was any CCIE lab out there worth taking, it'd be your lab from 4 years ago that you forgot about.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm drawing parallels to the times where people will write blog posts like years ago, and then they'll be trying to figure something out and they're Googling stuff and they end up going back to their own post that they did a while back.
Right.
Yep. Oh, I figured this out once before.
I go back and look at my old Python code all the time. Every time I'm trying to remember how to do something. What the hell does a class do again? Oh, okay. Yeah, I filled up this 2 years ago.
Like Chris said, as soon as you take that CCIE, get rid of the knowledge. Just lose it all.
Well, you just can't hold it forever, right? It's like juggling balls, man. You can't keep that in your head forever.
Exactly.
So let's fast forward to you get your CCIE. What is your post-CCIE? What's your ideal job role? I know you've mentioned working at Cisco, working at Disney, but if you had to set your sights on a specific role, what would that be?
Honestly, probably just tier 3 networking and troubleshooting. You know, the guys that the problem comes to when nobody else can figure it out. I feel like, you know, it would definitely be a challenge. I'd like to think that I'm smart enough to, you know, hopefully help out where I can. You know, like I said, I'm already at tier 2 and trying to improve everything I got. And my whole goal in any job I ever go to is to leave the network better than when I found it. You know, clear out logs, improve configurations, this and that. That's my personal goal, is to just make things better, because it makes things easier on me and the team. You know, when the network doesn't go down every night at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever because something was misconfigured, you know, you fix a configuration, it's like, oh, we don't have to come at 2 o'clock in the morning anymore. How about that? So honestly, any role where I can. And yeah, Cisco and Disney, they're definitely just the name drops, you know, because they're the tier companies. But honestly, anywhere that I can just be an effective network troubleshooter / implementer or whatever. I'm not too fond of the design. You know, if somebody says, well, hey, what can we implement this technology here? I'm like, I don't know. That's the design people. That's what they're there for. You tell me what I need to configure and I got you. I'm the configuring guy. So definitely hands-on.
It does take, you know, all kinds, because not like you said, not everybody wants to do the high level design and figure out all the requirements and that kind of thing. And conversely, not everybody wants to get in and do the implementation and troubleshooting that you really thrive on all the time. Yep. So it's good that there's people out there that can complement each other for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's people who are like, oh, going to cyber, or, you know, going to this career, it's exploding right now. Great. I don't like it. That's not me. That's not for me.
Let those guys handle that.
Yeah, I am perfectly fine in my networking bubble, and I'm probably good here for a while. So
something I do want to circle back on is, you brought it up a little bit ago, but we also talked about it before we started recording, that you said was very important to you when it comes to approaching the CCIE. You talked about how much you stressed that it was important to talk to your support system and make sure that they know what's going on. Can you jump into that just a little bit more, maybe, and go through how you approach that specifically, and maybe how you recommend people approach that? Because like we've said, the CCIE is a whole different animal. And I understand that only because I hear everybody else say that. But it's not like doing not to discredit these, but it's not like doing the CCNA, the Security Plus, even the CCMP. It takes a different type of time commitment and effort commitment. So how did you specifically approach that?
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was new for me. So what I thought I was communicating, I just kind of hoped it was good enough. You know, it definitely helps to have a partner who is understanding of your dreams and goals and aspirations. You know, you got to support each other like that. Because if you don't, then the CCIE is 10 times harder. Because if you don't have that support system, it's just, you know, like, look, you're gonna have to take, you know, care of the kids for this weekend or whatever while I'm, you know, sitting 8 hours in a lab dungeon, you know, studying and trying to work out this out with my cohorts or whatever. Date nights are gonna be, you know, slowing down or stopping, like, you know, not going to the movies as often. And in fact, here January, you know, I play some games every now and then, Call of Duty and stuff. But come January, until I get my test taken, I'm buckling down. I'm uninstalling all my games on my computer, because, you know, that's just my personality. If it's there, I'm going to want to play it. So I had to eliminate a lot of distractions. The one thing that helped me was moving to a new state where I didn't have friends. So I just didn't make any new ones. And nobody has invited me to anything. So I don't have to go anywhere. And that definitely helps. But if you have a community that you're constantly hanging around or texting or whatever, it does make it a little bit more difficult to get that across to somebody who's never even heard of a CCIE. Like, CCIE, that's 4 letters that don't mean anything to me. You know, like, oh, well, it entails a lot of studying, and some people just don't understand why you have to study so much, and they never will. And that's okay. That's not what they know. There's a lot of things I don't know. That's how it is. So you just have to do your best to explain it as best you can. Like I said, I came up with the highlighting rules. Like, look, this is where I stand, and this is how far I need to go. Please, let's pray that we pass this on the first time.
So I hear people explain their CCIE journeys and how they prepare, and I just see, you know, a lot of stress and a lot of effort and that kind of thing. So how do you approach how you're going to sustain through that? How do you approach taking breaks and making sure that you make time for you and your partner and other people in your life? How does that work for you?
Taking breaks. What's that?
Okay. That's an answer.
No, I do make time when I can. I do work the night shift. So, you know, he's working during the day. I get home at 11 o'clock at night. But 11 to 11:30, it's, you know, I usually don't come home and lab at that late at night. I'm usually labbing. It kind of works out in my favor. I'm working the night shift at a NOC, which is not as busy during the day. So it provides me time to study, you know, and hone in on my skills, as well as I'm not working during the day. I don't go until the afternoon, but my partner's not at home. So that gives me time to lab at the house. So it's kind of more of an ideal situation, and it's definitely helped me out tremendously. If we had the same schedule and, you know, we both worked at the same time and home at the same time, I don't know if that study schedule would be different. It would definitely be a different conversation of like, hey, you can't, no bugging. Like I can't be bothered, you know, from these times. And that may be a little bit harder, you know, if you're 6 feet away from each other in the other room kind of thing. So I feel like the opportunity was just, I'm going for it now because it's probably the best setup I'm having at the moment of my life. So I feel like it's going to be in my favor. But I realize that people don't have that opportunity all the time. So.
Well, but you have something that you know is going to work for you. You have a situation in your life where it just seems like it's going to fit, and you're taking advantage of it. So that makes a ton of sense.
Every little bit counts.
So as we go to try to round this out, David, is there anything that we haven't discussed about your journey or about any tips you may have for anybody preparing for the CCIE that you wanted to cover?
Just know that there is huge support system out there. Like Tim mentioned, may not be at your work. It may not be, you know, your neighbors across the street, but there's definitely some online communities that have been tremendously helpful from the Cisco online community. That was another thing that I didn't touch up on. I'm constantly in the Cisco online community on their forums because that also hones my skills as a network troubleshooter. Because somebody will come in with a problem and I will try my best to, you know, answer it. I mean, yesterday I did a BGP lab and I went through 13 steps of the path selection algorithm to get to the answer. And I pasted all that work into, it was almost like a blog post at that point. You know, I posted all that work into the forum. So helping other people is a huge, huge way to hone your skills and you know, join the communities. Like, I'm mainly in Discord. I'm sure there's other communities and forums out there of lots of, you know, CCA candidates just making their way through life, just trying to study in lab, you know, on the weekends, 4 hours at a time. So just know you're not alone. And there's people out there, whether you want to know that or not, just they're out there. And most of them are willing to help. I haven't met too many people who turn you away in those communities.
Yeah, I think there's the aspect of asking and getting help, but I think there's also that aspect that Tim and Chris have mentioned of accountability, is you have people that are in it with you that can keep you going. You can keep them going. And if everybody's staying on a schedule, then you know, everybody's moving up at similar times. So that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Tim and Chris, you guys got any final thoughts for this one?
No. Yeah, sorry. No, it's been a fun conversation. You know, obviously everyone has a different journey, but there's correlations we all get to draw with each other, even if you're taking the CCIE or not. So yeah, it's been a fun conversation, and best of luck to you, David. Hope to see you post the digits soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, same here. It's been good having a conversation. It's always interesting to see where people are, you know, on the journey to get the CCIE and kind of strategy they're taking, how they're finding that journey. So, I definitely wish you the best of luck. And same. Hope to see the digits soon.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for all the questions. Thanks for the invite, guys. I appreciate it.
And David, where and how can people find you to continue the conversation?
Yeah, I mainly post my IT and labbing stuff and journey on my Twitter, Kangaroos. It's just a fun name that got picked out. that's right. And then I post on Instagram, but that's more my workout stuff. So I would say Twitter is probably where my IT stuff goes, and just posting silly random labs and stuff and quirks that I find amusing. So hopefully other people do too.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time with us, David. Yeah, like Tim and Chris said earlier, I guess you better get back to labbing now. I can't believe you took a break for this long to join us. Everybody out there, thank you for joining for another episode of the Art of Network Engineering. You can catch us on the socials at Art of Net Eng, at Cables to Clouds, artofnetworkengineering.com, cablestoclouds.com. Find us. We are out there. This has been another episode of the Art of Network Engineering. Take care.
Hey, everyone. This is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of N-E-T-E-N-G. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.